أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي ليس لأوليته ابتداء ولا لأزليته انقضاء، وانحسرت الأوصاف عن كنه معرفته ورضعت عظمته العقول، والذي لا تواري عنه سماء سماء ولا أرض أرضا. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيد الفتحاء سيد المرسلين والأنبياء أبي القاسم محمد المصطفى، وعلى الجوهرة القدسية البتول العذراء سيدة النساء فاطمة الزهراء، وعلى بعلها أمير المؤمنين وبنيها الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم. لا سيما على بقية الله وحجته الكبرى الذي بيمنه رزق الورى، وبوجوده ثبتت الأرض والسماء، ولولاه لصاخت الأرض بأهلها، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من حين عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: إنما يريد الله ليذهب عنكم الرجس أهل البيت ويطهركم تطهيرا. We were discussing about the evidences, the dalail and proofs about the ismat and its fallibility of an imam. It's compulsory for an imam to be ma'soom. Under the subject of sifatul imam, what are the attributes and sifat which are compulsory to be found in every imam? And the first sifat and first attribute was ismat and infallibility. And we started the evidences about why an imam is supposed to be ma'soom. Why is it compulsory for an imam to have ismat and infallibility? First dalil, we have about six evidences here to be mentioned, inshallah, about the ismat of every imam. And the first one was naqd al-gharaz. Naqd al-gharaz means the purpose, the gharaz and purpose of the creation will be contradicted. Naqd al-gharaz, the purpose itself which Allah has for the creation will be contradicted if the leader, if the imam, is not ma'soom. And why is that so? Because if an imam himself is allowed to perform sins and ma'siyat, and is okay to do sins, it's okay for an imam to commit sins or crimes, then the entire purpose for him leading the humanity becomes null and void, because that's exactly what Allah does not want the humanity to do. And if the leader, the imam himself, commits sins, he cannot become a role model for the rest of the humanity to follow, and he cannot be able to stop the humanity from doing the similar or other sins. Thus, he will fail to become the leader. So the same purpose for which he was made the leader will be lost, and the same goal will be contradicted if he himself commits the sins. So he can never be trusted upon, he can never be relied upon, he can never be taken as a leader, as a role model by the people, because he himself is doing what the people are doing, which actually may be considered as worse. If the leader commits the sins and crimes, it becomes worse as compared to the nation. So this نقض الغرض contradiction of the goal of creation is impossible for Allah to contradict his own goal that he has set forth for the creation of the humans. And we can never do the worship of Allah properly, and we can never achieve the ma'rifat and in-depth recognition of God, and we can never become nurani and illuminous, and spiritual perfection can never be achieved. So if the ismat of an imam, infallibility of an imam, is not one of the compulsory sifat, you would find that the purpose of creation will be actually lost. The second evidence for this sifat of the imam, as we are discussing the sifat of the imam, attributes of every imam, the first is ismat, and the second dalil and evidence for the sifat of ismat and infallibility of every imam is the law of adl, qa'idatul adl, the law of adl, the law of justice. Since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is adil and just, which we already discussed in the series of lessons about the concept of justice of God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is adil, aynul adl, which is this sifat is aynul zat, nothing but his essence, and he's adil. He has commanded the rest to be adil. He has commanded us, the humans, to be adil and just. And upon the concept of adil, he's running the entire universe, which is standing up on the concept of adil and justice. Everything is placed. Adil literally means putting everything on the place where it deserves, where it belongs, where it is right, where it is correct to be put. Allah has put everything where it is right and correct and appropriate, where it deserves, where it belongs. And doing everything according to the wisdom, according to the goal behind the performing of different actions, is exactly according to the justice concept. We humans are required to perform everything in our life according to how it is appropriate and how it is wise for us and how it is correct for us to behave and do. And this is the law of adl, which Allah has created everything in the universe according to the law of adl, because he himself is adl and he loves things to be done in a justful and fair way. That's how he secures the wisdoms. That's how the wisdoms are secured. That's how the goals behind the creation are secured. And if the imam, who is the leader of the entire humanity, is not there to secure the justice, not ready to place everything on its place, do everything how it's appropriate, how it's correct, by securing the goals and wisdoms behind everything, then the entire purpose for the creation itself, then he would be the odd man in the entire universe, because everything in the universe has been created upon the concept of wisdom and is working according upon the concept of adl and justice, and is working according to the concept of adl and justice and doing its desired job. So if the leader of the humanity is doing unlike the rest of the creatures, he would be the odd person in the rest of the creatures, which are all working according to justice concept. So it's compulsory for the imam, the leader of the time, the leader of the humanity, the leader of the, the leader of all, to actually, imam is not just the leader of the humanity, he's the leader of all. So it's compulsory for the leader of all to exercise justice and lead the entire universe towards the wisdoms and towards the goals. This is the law of adl. which requires the leader to be the justful person to the highest extent, which we call ma'soom. The third evidence for the ismat and infallibility of every imam, every leader of the humanity, is the fact that if the imam of the time after the Holy Prophet, the leader of the time himself, is not ma'soom, then he himself would require another ma'soom as his leader. If the imam of the time is not accepted to be a ma'soom, it's not compulsory for him to be a ma'soom and infallible, then this imam of the time himself requires another imam. And this is what we call tasalsul, if you recall in the series of lectures of Tawheed and Oneness of Allah, we discussed very elaborately what's the meaning of Dawr, having, you know, A depending on B and B depending on A, which is impossible in philosophy and logic. And we also discussed the tasalsul concept, which is also impossible in the series of lectures of Tawheed and Oneness of Allah. And tasalsul means A depends on B, and B depends on C, and C depends on D, up till infinity, which is also impossible to accept, the chain of dependence. So this will end up into tasalsul, which is impossible. If the imam of the time after the Holy Prophet is not infallible, he would himself require another imam who is infallible and ma'soom. And if another imam for himself, and if that imam that he would require is also not compulsory to be a ma'soom, then that second imam will also require another imam for himself to be a guide for him. And that third one is also, if it's not compulsory for the third imam to be the ma'soom, then that third imam will also require another imam for himself, because he has to have a ma'soom imam. Other than ma'soom cannot become the guide, because how can you stop the zulm? It requires a ma'soom to stop the zulm of a zalim, the oppression of an oppressor, and to stop the oppression from taking place in its fullest sense of the word. And since tasalsul, the chain of dependence, like A depends on B, B depends on C, C depends on D, D depends on E, up till infinity, this is impossible. This is not possible in philosophy and logic. Since tasalsul is impossible, so that you have to stop. So when you have to stop, that's how Islam says, the first leader, the first imam has to be the ma'soom. There's no need for us to suppose that if the first imam is not ma'soom, then he would be requiring another person for as imam for himself. And that another person himself will require another imam for himself. So we will be forced to believe that even the first imam, if he's an imam, in order to avoid the tasalsul and interdependence up till infinity, the very first imam should be a ma'soom, so that he himself should not require another imam and guide for himself. And that's how the zulm and oppression has to be stopped, and oppressors would be stopped to the fullest meaning of the word. That's the third evidence, which we call dalil of tasalsul. And the fourth evidence about the ismat and infallibility of the being a compulsory sifat and condition for every imam, the fourth evidence is Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar, towards the imam. If an imam is not ma'soom, which it means that he may commit a sin, And when an imam can commit a sin, it would be wajib on the rest of the people to do amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar towards that imam to stop him from the sin. Because amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar are two wajibs in Islam which are always, always, always wajib. No matter what. No matter what condition may be. Yes, there are levels. Maybe you have the lowest level becoming wajib on you, or the higher level, or the higher, it has several levels. But the bottom line is that the wajib is still there, whatever level it may be. But the wajib of Amr bil Ma'ruf, the wujub of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar never stops. Whenever you find a sin, the wujub is there on you to stop it. So, if we consider that ismat and infallibility is not a compulsory attribute for the imam, that means that he may commit a sin and ma'siyat. And if he can commit a sin, it would be wajib on the rest of the nation that he is leading. The nation, it would be wajib on the nation to do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar. And when they are going to do the amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar towards the imam, the entire benefit of having an imam for the nation shatters and collapses, because the benefit was the imam is the one who guides the nation and protects the Sharia and the book by practicing to its fullest, practicing himself to its fullest. That's how he protects. So if he himself is unable to guide because he is guided by the nation, then the entire benefit for having an imam would be lost and the whole benefit would shatter. So it's compulsory for the imam to have the sifat of ismat in him as a must. The fifth evidence for the ismat and infallibility of every imam is that we consider the imam to be the hafiz and protector of the Sharia and the book from any increase or decrease or alteration into the Sharia or the book. And any increase or decrease or alteration in the book or the Sharia can only be done, can only be stopped, can only be protected if the leader himself knows the entire Sharia and the entire book without missing out on any minutest detail and practices the entire Sharia and the entire book without missing out the minutest detail. And that's exactly what the meaning of ismat and infallibility is. That somebody who practices the entire Sharia to its fullest, not performing any disobedience, any sin. And somebody who practices the entire book to its fullest, the book of God, to its fullest, not missing out on any of its teachings, not performing any of the slightest disobedience. So that's exactly what the meaning of ismat is. So in order to be the protector to its fullest, you need to practice. You need to know and practice the Sharia and the book to its fullest. And that's exactly what the meaning of ismat is. So for the imam to be the hafiz and protector of the Sharia and the book, from any increase or decrease or alteration, he himself has to be a ma'soom. The sixth evidence for the ismat and infallibility as a must condition for every ma'soom is the verse of Holy Quran, which is La yanalu ahdi of zalimeen. This verse from Surah Al-Baqarah, verse number 118. When Prophet Ibrahim was appointed as Imam by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he was appointed an imam after he became a Nabi, he became a Rasul, and after he became a Rasul, he became Khalilullah, the friend of God, and after he became the Khalil and friend, he became the imam. And he understood, he realized the highness of the position of imamat, and then he prayed to Allah to give this position and mansab to in his lineage as well. And that's where Allah replied back to Prophet Ibrahim towards his demand that لا ينال أهدي الظالمين. My ahd and covenant, which means the imamat, ahd of God and covenant of God means the imamat, the ahdul imama, this covenant of imamat is not going to reach the zalimeen and oppressors. Anyone who is a zalim cannot be an imam. The mansab and position of imamat cannot reach any zalim and oppressor. And Allama Tabatabai, rahmatullah alayh, doing the tafsir of this verse, has beautifully and elaborately mentioned the point which we learn in the light of this hadith. In short words, he says that when Allah has defined that the mansab and position of imamat, in other words, this mansab and position of imamat cannot reach any zalim, we should understand that zulm can be classified into three stages. Anybody who has done the zulm in the past, stage number one. Anybody who has done the zulm in the past and has stopped doing the zulm now, presently. That's first stage of first kind of zalim person, first category of a zalim person. Someone who has done the zulm in the past but has stopped doing the zulm now. Category number one. Category number two. Somebody has done the zulm in the past and is doing the zulm now as well. That's category number two. Category number three, somebody did not do the zulm in the past, but he is doing the zulm now. That's category number three. Let me repeat the categories very quickly. Category one of a zalim, someone who has done the zulm in the past but has stopped doing the zulm now. Category number two is somebody who has done the zulm in the past and is still doing the zulm now in his life. Category number three is somebody has not done the zulm in the past but is doing the zulm now. So he says none of these three categories can be, since all of these three are zalim, none of these three kind of people can ever find the mansab and position of imamat coming to them from Allah. Because if you have zulm in your character, be it in the past or in the present or in both times, you are zalim. Whether you have done the tawbah now, but your past was related to zulm, and you are excluded from this verse of Holy Quran. Because your past included zulm in your character. So, when a person who has stopped doing zulm now and done the tawbah, but he did the zulm in the past, even though it may be once in his life, is automatically excluded from this verse, then what to talk of those people who are doing sins right now, or who can any time commit sins? Even tomorrow. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it very, very, very clear how Allama Tabatabai is explaining this verse of Holy Quran, Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 118, La yanalu ahdi of zalimeen. My covenant, that means the covenant of imamat, is not going to reach the zalimeen. So when somebody has never done a zalimeen, from this, in the light of this verse, we understand that if in order for a person to be the imam for the mansab and covenant of Allah, the mansab and position of imamat, the covenant of God, reaching a non-zalim person, in the sense that somebody, a non-zalim would be somebody who has never committed a zulm and is never committing a zulm and will never commit a zulm. Somebody who has never committed any kind of zulm on himself and zulm towards others. Doing a sin, violating the law of the Creator, is a zulm and oppression on our own soul. So, somebody who does the zulm and oppression on his own soul by violating the law of the Creator, and or somebody who performs oppression, who oppresses other people by doing oppression and zulm on others, both are zalim. Anyone who has ever done zulm in the past or in the present or in the future is excluded. So someone who never does a zulm neither in the past nor presently nor in the future, he is none but a masoom. And that's exactly what we are talking about. So this ayat actually is one of the best evidences to prove the ismat for the imam who holds the divine position of imamat, which is referred as ahdi in the verse, my covenant. Because every non-masoom is a zalim. Every non-ma'soom is a zalim and oppressor. Be an oppressor on his own soul or oppressor on others. Whatever. Every non-ma'soom is a zalim. And none of the oppressors can be the imam, so none of the non-ma'soomeen can be the imams. So an imam has to be somebody who should be a ma'soom and infallible. That was the sixth evidence for the ismat as a compulsory condition and sifat and attribute for every imam. Basically, all the sifat which are compulsory for the prophet, for every prophet, are also compulsory for the imams, without a difference. So all those sifat and attributes which are all those evidences that we have, because since an imam is supposed to continue the job of the nabuwat, job of the nabi, in the absence of the nabi, so basically he's sitting on the chair of the nabi, so basically he's supposed to do the same job, except that he's not receiving the wahi and revelation directly upon himself. Other than that, he's doing the same job. He's sitting on the chair of the prophet. He has to have the similar attributes, without a difference. So all those evidences that we have for the Prophet to be a ma'soom, and all those other sifat which we are coming to, we are starting to talk about the rest of the sifat inshallah, all those sifat are compulsory to be found in an imam, without a difference, except about the receiving the wahi and revelation directly on himself, which is only specific to a Prophet. The second point which you know, we need to remember before I move forward to the other sifat and attributes for the imam is that we find the people in the nation of the Holy Prophet, just like all the rest of the nations of other prophets, the nation of our Holy Prophet is Ja'izul Khata. We are regular humans. We may anytime commit mistakes and zulm on ourselves or others. Allah has mentioned in Holy Quran, chapter number 3, verse 138. Afa in mata aw kutila in qalabtum ala aqabikum, talking about the Holy Prophet, that if he dies or gets killed, you would return back to your earlier situations. In other words, and the Holy Prophet had already informed us, and that's narrated in Tuhaf al-Uqul of Allama al-Harrani, page 24, 26, and 28, the hadith of the Holy Prophet where he himself has informed us, ala la tarji'u ba'di kuffaran, don't turn kuffar after me, don't become kafir after me. So we find that this, the nation who is vulnerable to become kafir after the Holy Prophet, how can the nation be trusted to appoint or select or to choose or to elect any ruler, any imam for themselves? And certainly this is something which is not assigned to the people, which we are going to come to that point very soon, when we will start the subject of who, after the sifat and attributes of the imam, we will come to the point that who appoints the imam, and then we will discuss that inshallah. The second attribute after the ismat and infallibility of an imam, the second thing which is compulsory to be found in every imam, is that he should be afdalur ra'iyyah, the most superior of all the nation, all the members of the nation. There shouldn't be any person present in the nation more superior than the imam of the time. That is compulsory, that there shouldn't be anybody more superior than the imam of the time. Why? Because the imam of the time is the leader of the entire nation. And if the imam of the time himself is not afdal ra'iyyah, most superior of the entire nation, there is somebody in the nation who is more superior than the imam, but still we are considering a less superior person to be the imam in the presence of another superior person in the nation, we are considering a less superior person to be the imam. If that is the case, then we are actually giving preference to a non-superior person, a mafzool person, over afdal. And mafzool person can never lead the afdal, which is illogical and un-Islamic. A non-superior person can never lead the superior. This is something which is condemned aqlan and shar'an. According to our intellect, it's something condemned to accept. It's not unacceptable. And likewise, un-Islamic, that a less superior person leads the superior. And that's not possible. So there isn't anybody in the entire nation who is superior, who can be superior to the imam. Imam is supposed to be the most superior of all of his nation in order to lead that nation. The next attribute is knowledge, ilm. We have already discussed a little bit related to that when we talked about the ismat of the imam and the fifth evidence, where imam is hafiz and protector of the sharia and the book. So in order to be the protector of the sharia and the book, you have to know the book to its fullest and know the sharia to its fullest, which already includes the concept of knowledge. And imam has to have the comprehensive, all-inclusive knowledge of the book and the sharia. He should know the zahir and batin of the book, of the messenger that he is working in his proxy. Right now we are talking about the Holy Prophet and the Imams after him. So we are talking about the book, which our book, which is Quran. So the Imam of the time has to, Imam after the Holy Prophet has to have the comprehensive knowledge of the Sharia of the Holy Prophet and comprehensive knowledge of the Holy Book, Quran. He must be having all-inclusive knowledge of the Zahir and the Batin of Quran. Inna lil-Qur'ana zahran wa batnan. How the Hadith of the Prophet says, Quran has a Zahir and a Batin. And we have actually abundant riwayat and narrations about that matter. وَلِبَطْنِهِ بَطْنٌ إِلَى سَبْعَةِ أَبْطٌ. And the button and hidden face, hidden meaning of the Quran has another further hidden meaning up till seven. Imam and some of the riwayat and narrations inform us to be that the hidden meanings are 70, 70. And my teacher Ayatollah Jawadi Hafizahullah used to say, said in his tafsir that if those hidden meanings are not different from each other, there's no reason for in the hadith that it would be said that they are like seven. They have to be different from each other in order for the masoom to say that they are seven hidden meanings. So an imam of the time is supposed to have the comprehensive knowledge of all the zahir of Quran and all the batin of Quran, all the hidden meanings, without missing out on anything. And that's how he could practice the entire Quran and entire Sharia and all the usul, the fundamentals of the religion, and all the furu, all the branches of the religion to its fullest. And that's how, after knowing, he can practice. And after the knowledge and practice, he can implement on the rest of the nation the rulings of the Sharia and the rulings of the book. And the Holy Prophet has already informed us that أنا مدينة العلم وعلي بابها. I am the city of knowledge and Ali is its gateway. And that hadith is mutawatir. The best form of the riwayat and narration is the best form of hadith is the hadith which is classified as mutawatir. And hadith al-mutawatir, certainly it's not our discussion to talk about the classifications of hadith in this series of lessons, but just to give you a tip about what we mean with the word mutawatir, is the kind of hadith which has been narrated by in such a way or by so many people that it causes yaqeen and certainty and certitude in the minds of the reader, because this hadith has been narrated in such a way and so many people that it causes yaqeen. So when a hadith is classified to be mutawatir, there's not even a slightest speck of doubt remaining about the authenticity or the contents of that hadith. So this hadith is classified by the Sunni and the Shia scholars to be, it's narrated by so many variety of ways that the scholars of hadith, ulama ul-rijal, classify this hadith to be hadith al-mutawatir. So there's not a slightest doubt remaining about the narration of this hadith. It has been narrated by different sects. So Prophet has said that I am the city of knowledge and Ali is its gateway. So you got to come to Imam Ali to be able to have access to the city of knowledge of the Holy Prophet, which Imam Ali has access to the entire city. He's the gateway. He has the knowledge of the entire city. And Prophet has also said in another hadith that أنا مدينة الحكمة وَهِيَ الْجَنَّةِ وَعَلِيٌّ بَابُهَا. I am the city of wisdom and that's the paradise and Ali is its gateway. I am the city of wisdom which is paradise and Ali is its gateway. So Imam Ali has the comprehensive knowledge exactly equal to the knowledge of the Holy Prophet and comprehensive wisdom exactly equal to the wisdom of the Holy Prophet without difference. The fourth attribute, Ismat and Afzaliyat and Ilm, have been discussed. Now the fourth attribute, which is compulsory for the Imam of the time, is Shuja'at, being courageous. Courage is compulsory to be found in the Imam, like it is compulsory to be found in the Prophet, like it's compulsory to be found in the Jama'u Shara'it Mushtahid that we must follow in the time of the greater absence period. The Mushtahid that we follow has to be Shuja', has to be courageous enough to tell the hukm of Allah in the face of the Tawaghit and Zalimeen of today, just like similar to that, because Mujtahid is doing that, he's working, he's the Na'ib, he's working in proxy of the Imam of the time. So why not the Imam should be courageous? Imam is working in proxy and niyabat of the Prophet. When Prophet has to be courageous, the Imam also has to be courageous. And when Mujtahid is working in the proxy and niyabat of the Imam, the Mujtahid also need to have the courage to say the hukm of Allah on the face of the enemies without getting scared. If you are scared and coward, set aside. Don't take the position of leadership of the Ummah. Let not allow your timidity, your cowardice, which is your personal problem, let not allow your personal problem to become an obstacle in the way of Islam, in the way of Kalimatul Haqq, in the way of truth, in the way of God. If you are a coward, set aside. Don't harm Islam. Don't harm the Ummah. The leader, generally speaking, every Imam must be shuja' and coward. That's pure intellect. He has to be courageous enough. He should not be a coward. Every Imam should not be a coward and not be a timid. He must be shuja' and courageous enough to practice and to implement and to say what the hukm of Allah is, despite what the tawaghit, the Tahuts and the Zalimeen say, or the obstacles they bring forward, or the Munafiqeen and hypocrites bring forward, all the obstacles that may be brought by the Munafiqeen and the hypocrites, or the Kuffar, or the Zalimeen, or the Tawaghit. Otherwise, the leadership would be of no use. The moment you find a pressure, you bend. You bend. The moment you find a pressure from the hypocrites or the kuffar or the taghuts or the zalims, you stop preaching the hukm of Allah. The hukm of Allah would be lost and gone and faded and forgotten. The fifth attribute which is compulsory for the Imam of the time is zuhud, keeping away from this dunya and its glitter and glamour and attractions. This is compulsory to be found in every Imam. A person has to be Amir of his soul. A person has to be in charge of his soul. If we are driven away by our desires as soon as we see any kind of benefits or blessings, or material blessings of God in this dunya, and we get driven away by those material blessings or benefits or interests and get attached to the material blessings and material interests of this material dunya, then we are not in charge of our soul. We are a captive of our desires. We are not amirs of our soul. We are asirs and captive of our desires. And somebody who is a captive of his desires, he is driven away by his desires, cannot lead others. Doesn't make sense. You have to have charge and control of your soul in your hands. and submit to Allah, the Creator, and not allow your soul to be attached to the material things and to be driven away towards the material desires in order to lead others. That's how you can abstain from falsehood and batil. That's how you can abstain from the from misuse of power and misuse of money and misuse of positions and misuse of the material interests, the material belongings of this dunya, by taking charge of your soul and controlling it and crushing the ego and disattaching yourself and never attaching yourself to its material blessings. That's exactly what happens in this world. People are the influential lobbies, the rulers. We find so many rulers in this world who are working to please the influential elite, upper class lobbies, and doing oppression on the innocent people in order to please the less than 1% of the influential elite rich class and to fulfill their interests. Islam considers it compulsory for the leader to be having zuhud, that means not getting involved in this world and its material belongings. Have zero attachment towards this dunya and its material belongings. Look at Imam Ali alayhi salam, the best example and the most superior Imam after the Holy Prophet. He has divorced this dunya three times. قَدْ طَلَّقْتُكِ ثَلَاثًا. I have divorced you three times. There is no rujoo. There is no turning back after three divorces. This is the level of the zuhud of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And the way he used to wear, the way he used to eat, what he used to eat, how he used to drink, what he used to drink, and his eat, his food, his drink, his dress, is all, they are all best examples for the entire humanity to follow the zuhud concept of Islam, and that's how a leader is. We find even in the history that he used to seal, make it tight, seal and shut down the bag in which he used to put his bread, which was so stiff that he used to break that bread with his knee. And when somebody asked him, why did you seal this bag in which you have put your bread? Imam Ali alayhi salam replied, أَخَافُ أَن يَضَعَ فِيهِ أَحَدُ وُلْدِي أَدَامًا. I'm afraid that one of my kids, one of my children may put some kind of, you know, liquid thing in that bread. In other words, Adam is a kind of a liquid thing. So, in other words, so if a liquid kind of thing or is put in that bread in order to make that bread softer and easier to be consumed, easier to be eaten, I'm afraid one of my children may put some that liquid thing, Adam, in the bread so that it becomes softer to eat. Imam Ali alayhi salam is not ready to make his stiff bread that he used to break with his knee softer. He need to crush his egos and desires to that fullest extent that he is throughout his life eating the stiff bread without allowing any of his children to put anything on the bread to make it softer. So now that you would end up into liking your food. Even liking your food is a kind of attachment. Look at the highest perfection and peak of avoiding the attachment towards this dunya, the same concept of zuhud which we are talking about. And that's how you find the Imam and his family, Hazrat Fatima salamullah alayha, and Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, and even Hazrat Fidda salamullah alayha, they are all giving away their food after fasting 3 days consecutively to a miskeen, a destitute person, and a yatim, an orphan, and an asir. A person who was captive and he was set free, and he came and demanded and asked. And Surah Ad-Dahr was revealed for the sake of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam, which is another dalil for their superiority. And also, the sixth attribute which is compulsory for the Imam, for every Imam, is his akhlaq, his morality. He has to have the highest level of akhlaq and morality. If the Imam, who is sitting on the chair of the Prophet, doing the job of the Prophet after the Prophet, is not having the similar level of high morality and ethics of the Prophet, he cannot continue with the job of the Prophet. Allah has said to the Holy Prophet, فَبِمَا رَحْمَةٍ مِّنَ اللَّهِ لِنْتَ لَهُمْ وَلَوْ كُنْتَ فَضَّاً غَلِيظَ الْقَلْبِ لَنْ فَضُّوا مِّنْ حَوْلِكَ. Surah Ali Imran, verse number 159. It's because of the rahmat of Allah that the Holy Prophet was such that he was soft towards them, and if he was strict and strong-hearted, people would have shifted away from the Prophet. Prophet had the highest level. إِنَّكَ لَعَلَىٰ خُلُقٍ عَظِيمٍ لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ. Prophet was a role model. And we find that the Imam of the time has to have the similar akhlaq, being sitting on the chair of the Holy Prophet. He needs to have the highest level of all the moral attributes of Islam, starting from the ilm and iman and ma'rifat and yaqeen and khawf, the fear of Allah, raja, hope in God, taslim, essence of submission towards haq and truth and reality and God, rida, the pleasure of Allah, sabr and patience, shukr, thankfulness and gratefulness towards the Lord, tawakkul, reliance after action, husn al-dhan, having good viewpoint about others, about Allah and others, ilm, hilm, I'm sorry, hilm, which is the patience, and also afu and forgiveness, and also the kazm al-ghayb. So we are talking about the sifat of the moral sifat of every Imam, and the kazm al-ghayb, that means controlling the anger, and sidq, which means truthfulness, and khulus, the sincerity, and ikhlas, the highest level of purity from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, haya, which cannot be translated into English or any other language, and iffat and chastity, and rahm and mercy of Allah, and insaf, fairness, and ghairat, which cannot be translated into English or any other language, and wiqar and dignity, and nasihat, giving advices to others, and tawadhu, being down to earth, and ita'at means obedience, and all the rest of the list. So an Imam of the time needs to have the highest of the moralities and the values of Islam and Quran, the divine values. Islam is nothing but the package of divine values. And these divine values actually cannot be translated into any other language, because these are the divine values of Quran, and any other language has to adopt the words of Quran to understand and follow, because these things are only learnt from Quran nowadays. And so these were basically the six most important of the attributes, and we are coming to the end. These six were the most important of the attributes that must be found in every Imam. And beside these six, there are certain other attributes as well, But these were the most important ones. Other attributes like the Imam of the time cannot be engaged in any lowly kind of profession or in his personal life, like a janitor, for instance, or a barber, or any kind of sickness or illness can never happen into the body or of the Imam. Soul is impossible to have a sickness, but the body of the Imam is impossible to have any kind of sicknesses or problems or illnesses which are repelling towards the nation, like any kind, like leprosy, for instance, like jazam and leprosy, for instance. And what is narrated about Prophet, and that's the same about the Prophet as well. Like we already discussed in the Prophethood series of lectures, that the Prophet can also not have any of the lowly professions or any of those illnesses in his body. And what has been narrated by some of the Muslim sects about Prophet Ayyub, that he had those kinds of illnesses in his body and leprosy and all that. It's totally unacceptable and false, related to Prophet Ayyub, that he never ever had that kind of illness, which is narrated like a leprosy. That is incorrect and false, and we disagree with that and do not accept it, and we are unable to accept it in Islam, for any prophet to have a sickness like leprosy and jazam to take place. And any kind of illness which is repellent towards the people, and people get repelled from the personality of the Imam, is impossible to be found. And also all the knowledges found in the Imam have to be God-gifted, not earned through anybody in the society. They all need to be God-gifted knowledges. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى سَيِّدِنَا وَنَبِيِّنَا مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِهِ الطَّاهِرِينَ إِنْشَاءَ. In the next lesson, we will continue. We will talk about the next point, which is who appoints the Imam and who has the right to appoint the Imam. Thank you very much.
Yes, basically, of course, we have to apply it wherever we may be living, in the West or in the East. And even in the East, of course, the life of dunya is the same. Less money or more money is not the point. The point is getting attached to it. So even there are people who have less money, but they are still attached to it. And there are people, some people, who have more, but they are not attached to it. Basically, we need to understand the concept of Islam, that in Islam it's permitted to earn money from halal, which there is no restriction upon that. So we can earn as much money as we want from halal, but the restrictions are, all the restrictions in Islam apply in spending the money. Don't spend the money more than what you need for your necessities of life within the limits of your social status. Haysiyat-e urfi, social status, within the limits of your social status. And when you spend, also we need to remember that we should realize a mu'min, by virtue of his iman, remembers his akhirat and accountability always. What Imam Ali alayhi salam has informed us, that fi halaliha hisabun wa fi haramiha iqabun. In the halal of this dunya, there is hisab and accountability. In the haram of this dunya, there is iqab and punishment. So as a mu'min, we must recall the accountability at all times. And we need to remember that we are held accountable. Everything we are doing is written in the books by the angels, and also we are held accountable in the grave and on the day of judgment. If we remember the day of judgment and accountability, and we remember those teachings of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt at all times, those ahadith of Ahlul Bayt which they discuss about this dunya, if we recite those sermons, those hadith, and remember our hisab and accountability, and remember our debt, this will stop us from getting attached towards this dunya. Thank you.
If you would like to participate in these online lecture series, please visit www.al-asr.org. The website